League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello and welcome to the Green 19 Podcast. I'm Dominique Yates. Joining me, as always, Ryan Wood and Tom Silverstein here in Lambeau Field on this Sunday, coming off the Packers' comeback loss, 31-29 to the Minnesota.
Comeback loss,
comeback loss, right? Trying to mix things up. A comeback that fell short, losing 31-29. And interesting, very, very interesting game in more ways than one. And let's just start with the offense. Jordan Love making his return. I talked with our friend Pete Doherty after the game, and he gave Jordan Love's performance a C-. You know, had a couple of moments here and there, I guess completed around 60% of his passes, was it 389 yards, four touchdowns, three interceptions. What do you make, a spoon, of Jordan Love's return game?
You know, I assumed that he was going to start out slow. The way it is when you haven't played two games for a while. And I think if the game hadn't turned the way it did, gone 28-0, it might have been an easier game for him, and he might have been better. But him throwing, was it 54 times?
Yes.
Is ridiculous. I mean, for a guy coming off an injury like that, it's not what you want. And I saw shades of him, you know, shades of the Jordan Love that finished last year. And then I saw parts of him that, you know, I'm sure Matt LaFleur is hoping is injury related and not that he's gotten sloppy with his decision making and, you know, overconfidence in his arm. But, you know, I kept telling people on the blog, they were like, take him out in the first half. For Willis, and I'm like, you know, he's going to get hurt or whatever, and you just got to let him play through it. It's part of the process. It's part of the process of being hurt. And in the end, you know, he gave him a slight chance with some plays, and it all comes down to progression, and the next progression is the Rams.
Ryan, I'll give you the same opportunity. What did you see from Jordan Love out there today?
I think the best thing is that he got through this all four quarters unscathed with the knee. Right. There was no setback. Because you saw him, I think it was late second quarter, kind of shaking that left knee a little bit after taking a hit. And it's 28-0. And, you know, you just at that point, you're like, okay, stay healthy. And he did. I thought today was a reminder that this is still an extremely young offense, right? They got a lot of great reps under their belt, a lot of great experience last season. But it's still year two of a very young offense. And you can look at just the boneheaded picks that Jordan Love threw today, which is something that he didn't do the second half of last year. He misses 2 weeks. There's some rust. He throws boneheaded picks today. That's not really his game. I don't think over the long course of time, that's going to be an issue, because we've seen him go long stretches without doing that. But today it was a problem. That's a young quarterback right there. We saw Dontavian Wicks make some plays and drop some absolute bunnies.
Yeah.
That's a young receiver right there. This is a young offense that is still going to have growing pains. I think you saw growing pains today. I think it's promising that while they're having growing pains and their two losses, they've had, what, 29 points apiece? What was it, week one? I believe it was 29 points week one as well. So they're still, even when they're not playing well, they didn't play well, they're still hitting about 30 points. If they can clean that stuff up, this is going to be a heck of an offense. I mean, this is a really talented team. They're just a really young team, and they're going against a Vikings team that's really clicking on all cylinders right now, and you can't afford to have this boneheaded stuff happen. The drops, the picks, the penalties, awful amount of penalties. It's a young, fairly undisciplined team that still needs to grow up a little bit.
I think that's what stood out to me, what at the end of the first quarter had more penalties than first downs. Obviously, second quarter, they were able to get things going a little bit more, but those things like Matt LaFleur talked about, these penalties, some of these mistakes will come back to haunt them, and it showed up in this game. You know, you're down 28-0 to start it. Tom, you mentioned the point about pretty surprised that Jordan Love threw the ball as much as he did, which begs the question, why did Josh Jacobs only get 9 carries?
Well, you're down 28-0, and it's you got to heave it. You know, there's not much you have left. I thought they did start to use Jacobs and Emmanuel Wilson a little when they started to get closer. Then they started to use them a little more. I know that I think LaFleur hinted that Josh Jacobs wasn't on the field because he was blowing blocking assignments. You know, he said they were having protection issues. And I'm starting to think that Emmanuel Wilson is their best pass protector because Jacobs was not on the field for a lot of those plays. You know, they were begging for a guy like Aaron Jones today. You know, they needed, when you're behind like that, when you're ahead, Josh Jacobs is the perfect back to have. You know, he's just going to keep pounding on you. But they needed some guys to make some big plays, and Emmanuel Wilson is more of a big play guy than Josh Jacobs. So I think that's kind of what we saw. But ultimately, you know, I mean, the protection wasn't that bad for Jordan Love. You know, he got, considering how much the Vikings blitz and how good their pass rush has been, he had enough time. He threw some, you know, balls off his back foot. I don't know. It just turned into one of those games where you have to throw it.
I'm not going to mince words. I thought it was absolutely ridiculous that Josh Jacobs had 9 carries and Emmanuel Wilson had 8. I understand the game got lopsided early on. They're in a hole. You got to throw a lot more. But that's still 17 carries. It should never be an even split between those two. If Josh Jacobs is healthy. If he's injured, that's a different thing. But if Josh Jacobs is healthy, he's the fifth. You made him the fifth highest paid running back in this league. He's not the same breed as Emmanuel Wilson. Emmanuel Wilson's not the same breed as him. If there's 17 carries, Josh Jacobs has to have at least 12 of those. The even split was ridiculous. Matt LaFleur's talked about the pass protection issues, but it was Emmanuel Wilson that didn't pick up an outside stunt on a 2nd-and-8 and gave up a sack that made it 3rd-and-18. He's the one that gave up a sack.
Had a false start as well.
I thought it was asinine that you have an even split between those two guys. You brought Josh Jacobs in here to be your workhorse. The best version of this Packers rushing attack and offense as a byproduct is Josh Jacobs having at least 15 carries every single week. If he is healthy, that is the minimum. That's not the average. That's the minimum you have to hit. Josh Jacobs hasn't had fewer than 9 carries in a game since November of the 2021 season. He had 32 carries week 2 against the Colts.
Yeah.
A major reason that he won that game. He's had 23 carries the last 2 games since then. And I asked him after the game, how you feel? He's fine. It's not a body thing. I asked Emmanuel Wilson, do you think it was going to be even split coming in? He said, no, that surprised me. I could not understand that. I understand that when you're down, you're going to have more passes. But the idea that you're going to split carries between Josh Jacobs and Emmanuel Wilson just makes no sense to me.
Yeah, that was the biggest point that, like I said, I was trying to understand it myself because of the potential.
Well, you have to look at the plays. I don't know how many plays each guy was on the field, but I think Emmanuel Wilson was probably on the field as much as Josh Jacobs, and that's because they were ticked about his pass protection. So he's going to wind up getting more carries or the same amount of carries because he's on the field the same amount. So
but he gave up the sack, though.
Well, everybody does something. I mean, Josh Jacobs is apparently doing enough that they pulled him out of the game because of pass protection. If you read LaFleur's press conference, they were having a problem. And so Emmanuel Wilson sticks his nose in there. If he had one mistake and gave up a sack, you know, that happens. But if he's consistently better than the other guy, then you put him on the field. This was a game where they were passing. You know, this was a game where, you know, if this had been Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams would have been on the field more because he could pass block. And it was just one of those things. They were going to have to throw the ball. So, yeah, I think ultimately, especially at the beginning of the second half, they could have run the ball more. I thought that they had an opportunity. They didn't need to put it in Love's hands right away. But once they started chucking it around, then it was like street ball, you know. They're just going to throw it.
I'm just not understanding the rationale when if it's pass pro when one of these backs gave up a sack and the other didn't.
But are you sure that he gave up the sack? You sure it was his responsibility?
I asked him after the game, and he said he's supposed to have the outside stunt. So yeah, that's what he told me.
Okay.
Secondly, it's not just one mistake. It's third and one, and then Manny Wilson tries to time the snap count just right, and it's a false start. Now it's third and six. Good things are going to happen when Josh Jacobs is on the field, and it's a gamble when he's not, because he's one of the most complete, well-rounded playmaking backs in this league. That's why you paid him what you did, to bring him in here to be the workhorse. And oh, on the other side, it's Aaron Jones with the 22 carries, and he's now obviously the lopsided score has something to do with that. But there was opportunities to run the ball more. 54 passes is ridiculous, and to have single-digit carries in any game with Josh Jacobs just doesn't. It doesn't maximize what he is.
And like you said, to his credit, he didn't complain about it. He just kind of said it is what it is, move forward. But I'm sure deep down, like you said, when the game is going well, he would love to have 15, 16 carries and be able to, you know, do what he does best. And that just made great things happen for an offense. As far as with the wide receivers, you mentioned Dontayvion Wicks. He did have two catches, but there was one right in the end zone at the end, just smacked him like right dead in the chest. So that was a tough one. But I think even though it's a young group, what more can you say about Jaden Reed and just the performances that he has? Because you knew with Jordan Love back, you would expect the ball to be thrown more, which it was, and he was just able to sit back and just have a field day out there. What do you make, Tom, of the day from Jaden Reed? Because in my opinion, he was maybe the only offensive player that deserved the day from this game.
Yeah, he had a really nice game. I'm going to pivot into, I think losing Christian Watson was a huge deal.
Yes.
I think early on, I believe it was one of Jaden Reed's first catches, all the coverage went to Christian Watson, who was running down the field and left Reed wide open. And I think he was probably a big part of either clearing things out or being that guy that Dontayvion Wicks was on the deep ball down the sideline, on the ball into the end zone. Those are plays that Christian Watson's kind of made for, you know. And I don't know if Christian Watson would have made the one that went off Wicks's chest, but he would have gone up high, tried to high point it with his hands. He's just he's a little better at that kind of stuff. You know, I don't know if he would have tried to break up that pass, that really ill-advised deep ball that Love threw, but maybe he does. And maybe they find him more open during those blitzes. So I think that kind of affected him. And it put all that onus on Wicks, and he wasn't ready for the moment.
Ryan, I guess what do you make of not only Jaden Reed's play, but as Spoon just kind of talked about with Christian Watson just leaving, and I guess it was an ankle injury, and yeah, he didn't return after going down in that first half.
What did Jaden Reed end with?
I think it was 139.
Yeah.
Like 139 receiving yards.
I mean, he's really good. Like, yes. Is there any, like, he's really, really good. And a lot of that was open, right?
I mean, yeah.
He has a knack early in the second season after being their leading receiver last year to just get open.
Yeah.
You would expect that to change at some point. Like, if he keeps this up, he's their best receiver. He is going to get the focal attention, the focal point of opposing secondaries week in and week out. He's just going to have to. And there's some type of chemistry that he has going on with Jordan Love specifically, because the two games he's gone off has been Jordan Love games. So, that's obviously a bright spot. On the flip side, for whatever reason, Dontayvion Wicks is not catching Jordan Love at all. I mean, he had drops in week one. He had drops today. I don't know what's going on there. I think it's very telling that they stuck with Dontayvion Wicks. The next play, obviously, it was a fourth down that they chucked it up to Dontayvion Wicks and it hit him between the one and the three in his chest. The next play, that they come out the next series, and they throw a little dump off, a little screen to Dontayvion Wicks just to kind of get him his confidence, his mojo back, a nice, easy completion for him. They went back to him intentionally because they know that the best version of this offense includes Dontayvion Wicks. He is an absolute playmaker. He showed that today. He had two touchdowns. Like, there was a good side of this today, a side that shows you why they need him to be at his best, but the drops are just, they're inexcusable. They've got to get better. The drops have got to go away. And when they do, you're going to see these things clean up. I think you're going to see a more efficient quarterback because the completion percentage hasn't been good enough, but there's been a lot of drops in both Jordan Love's starts that have added to that. More efficiency. I think what you're seeing is that they're explosive on offense. I mean, they can generate big plays with the best of them. It's just when you get that efficiency with the explosiveness, now you're cooking with full gas.
Yeah, and I think at the end of the day, too, when you move ahead, starting next week and beyond, you just have to play consistent because you have one bright spot, then one bad one. Tucker Kraft gets a touchdown and a two-point conversion, then he fumbles. It's just you're trying to get some momentum going, and you just can't capitalize on that. So that's just my big takeaways from the offense. But on the defensive side of the ball, I guess if you give the bright spot again, Xavier McKinney, becoming the first Packers player ever to have an interception in his first four games. And the secondary, the rest of it, I mean, you knew that there would be some struggles not having Jaire Alexander, not having Carrington Valentine, but it was some plays in that game for the Vikings with Jordan Addison, Justin Jefferson, where they just had no struggles at all. I don't think they broke a sweat with some of the plays that they made because they were just running open field. Just, I guess, what did you see from that, Tom? And I guess, were you surprised at how open some of those Vikings guys were?
Well, some of them, yeah. I mean, I would go to the lack of pass rush for a big reason why there were so many guys open. You can only hold Justin Jefferson for so long. Right. Jordan Addison is a really good receiver. There were some mistakes. You know, Corey Ballantyne bit on a hitch and go really badly, and he can't do that. He's in a zone situation. You can't bite on that so hard. There were times when I think Keyshawn Nixon picked up a drag route and he should have dropped back and it was a pass to Jefferson. So there were mistakes, but the lack of pass rush was eye-opening, and especially for a group of four who are supposed to be the second coming. They didn't sniff Sam Darnold in the first half, you know? I mean, it was bad. They've played this offensive line before, and they've gotten a bunch of sacks. But Gary, Preston Smith, Van Ness, Clark, Wyatt, and Enagbari, no sacks, no quarterback hits, and one tackle for the loss. So, you know, if this is that group that was supposed to be so dominant, apparently they're really good against a crappy offensive line like Tennessee's. Yeah. But when it comes to and then the Vikings don't have a great offensive line. They have two good tackles, and, you know, they're a little weak in the middle.
Yeah, but it is crazy to go from 8 sacks 1 week to 0 from the up front. Quay Walker, you know, he got
Keyshawn Nixon forced the fumble. They blitz the first half. They rush four the entire half. That's all they did. He was completely confident. Halfley, I'm talking about, was completely confident that he could get to Darnold with four men, and he couldn't.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until he started to blitz that you're like, look, it's working. You know. So he was really late on the trigger to start bringing pressure. He should have done it in the first half.
And yet, way before Joe Barry would have. Because, I mean, think like, did we ever see Joe Barry in 3 years ever dial up a slot corner blitz at the right time? Like, I can't remember one. So, I don't know. I don't put it on Jeff Hafley because I think that you should expect this defensive front to do something.
Some pressure.
Yeah.
And they did it.
Put it completely on
him. Right.
It's just you have to adjust when your guys aren't playing well. And it was eye-opening to see, you know, Rashawn Gary, where was he?
You know? And I do think that the you said this, but I do think the back end really struggled today, too. I mean, they're, you know, Eric Stokes on a trail coverage just getting completely lost. I had no idea where, you know, on that drag. There were plenty of times.
Are you talking about the one on Jefferson?
83.
Got wide open?
83. Early in the game.
Oh, early in the game, yeah.
I
don't know what happened.
Yeah.
That was a blown coverage by somebody.
Yeah. I don't know that it was Eric Stokes, but I don't know what's supposed to happen on that play. Someone's got to cover. There were multiple times by everyone that they just didn't cover. And when you're not getting a pass rush, that only compounds the fact that you're not covering. It was the opposite of last week where you had the pass rush and you were covering.
Yeah.
So that has to be better. I think the bright spot is, like, when you look at the four games, I think that this has been an average defense for the most part. They've played well against bad offenses. They've given up points against good offenses with good playmakers. I don't know where it settles over the long course of the season, but I don't think that you know what tilts the needle, what breaks the tie from good and bad and average. They are opportunistic. They will take the football away. You know, Isaiah McDuffie dropped a pick today early on that hurt him, but otherwise, like, they're taking the football away, and it wasn't just the picks today. It was the sack fumble on the slot corner blitz. If that continues, that can cover up a lot of sins. That can cover up a heck of a lot of mistakes and issues on your defense when you take the football away. Something they absolutely didn't do last year. All last year, they are doing. They already have eight interceptions this year, and that's more than they had all of last season.
Yeah.
Through four games, Xavier McKinney. I asked him this week, "You want to make it four in a row?" And he said, "That's the plan." Which is asinine. That's absurd to have an interception in four straight games. Almost nobody does that.
No.
That's more than half that the Packers had as a defense all last season. So that is a very, very much a bright spot, that they're taking the football away. I think that that'll continue. I think they have playmakers that can do that. Now, can they get rid of the other side of it? The issues that they've had in run defense at times, the blown coverages, can they get consistent pass rush? Those are things that are going to make the difference on whether they stay average or they actually become a good defense.
Yeah, because there's a lot of plays and moments, especially in this game, where you had to just dig down and get that stop. Because, like I said, you can play the what-if game, but yeah, if McDuffie gets that interception, there is no touchdown. It was, a 3rd and 14? They gave up the two big plays in the first quarter, leads to that Addison touchdown. So there's just so many moments. If you can capitalize early, get them off the field, who knows what we're saying. But again, that's the name of the game. When we talk special teams, I guess in terms of giving players an A, for me, I mentioned Jaden Reed and probably the other one, Daniel Whelan. I mean, his punts have been great, and even the one that led to the muff punt, and then they were able to score off that. But no one wants to hear about that. Braden Narveson, are we to the point now where we say there is a big problem when it talks with the kicker? I'll start with you, Ryan.
Matt LaFleur said he was very effusive in his praise after this one. He's very full-throated support behind Braden Narveson, which I guess what else are you going to do at this point, right? But this is a friggin' problem. I mean, this is a absolute problem, and I've been saying it for weeks now. You cannot live in this league missing a kick every single week. You just can't, because a lot of weeks, okay, it's not going to make a difference in the game. It absolutely did today. This was a pretty significant game. You had an NFC North rival at home. It was early in the season, but still, you know, as Aaron Jones said after this game, it counts double. Like, it was a pretty big game, and literally those 6 points are the difference on the scoreboard. It changed the second half as they're making the momentum, making this comeback, having those 6 points. It's night and day. It's a 37-yarder and a 49-yarder. You can't miss these kicks, and it's. Okay, if it's a one-off, that's fine, but now it's a trend, right? He's missing it every single week. I understand that what else are they going to do, but yeah, it is a massive problem that you cannot live in this league missing kicks every week. It will hurt you. As the Packers saw last season, it could kill you. It is a big problem they've got to fix. I don't know how they do it, Spoon.
Well, there will be some options. I mean, one of the things they could do is as soon as Giants get their kicker back, they could bring Greg Joseph back. You know, I mean, if that's what it takes, you know, then that's what you have to do. If you're not going to be developing a young guy, but there you go. Next year, you'll be back on this merry-go-round again, or you stick with them. You know, you stick with them another week or see what happens. But yeah, those two field goals today were just crucial in the outcome of the game. And it's a different game if he hits those field goals. And you got to come away with points. It's really disheartening for the offense or for the team as a whole when you get down there and the guy misses field goals. It's to the point now where you got to consider a change. But, you know, you got to have somebody, you know, to be able to replace them. And I'm not sure who that is right now.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of it either, because he talked in the locker room. He said it's not the operation. Matt Orzech, those guys are doing exactly what they're supposed to do with the snap and the hold. What is it, just a young rookie guy? Is it a mental guy? I mean, I guess in college, what, he made under 80% of his kicks then, but I mean, what is the answer? What's the solution? You mentioned Greg Joseph. It's hard to kind of figure it out, because especially when you're, you know, Brian Gutekunst has said he has a short leash when he talks with kickers. I don't know what they do in this situation.
Well, he said he was going to have a long leash with he was this. Changing, you know, and he was going to have a longer leash with
careful what you ask
Narvison.
For.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you continue to have a long leash with missing kicks every week? Like, especially at some when point, it has magnified. To stop.
Yeah.
Like, make it stop. You know, Tom. I thought you, Dominic. I thought you had the stat of the game. When I didn't even realize it in the press box, you said their first punt came when they were down 28-0.
Yeah,
that's incredible. Yeah. Like, you know, they had drives, they had opportunities, turnovers, mistakes, and missed kicks. Like, that's going to kill you in this league.
Yeah.
I don't know. The Vikings are better, way better than I thought they were coming into the year. They're 4-0. They've earned 4-0. But when you don't punt until you're down 28-0 at home, you're a big part of the problem.
Yeah. That's it. I don't know what else to say about it. But when you move forward and look ahead, I guess the thing that kind of still is crazy about all of this, we have went through a long list of mistakes and penalties and drop passes and all of that. They're still right there with the chance to win the game. It's a two-point game. The Vikings only scored 3 with the rest of the way after it was 28-0. So there's still a lot of opportunities right there for this group. So what are you looking for? This is a question for both of you guys. What are you looking for moving forward when you head to the Rams? Because, like, not everything's going to be dramatically fixed in 1 week of practice and 1 week of prep. But what are some of those big things that it's like, okay, you have to be better at this, or one loss turns into 2 and on and on and on, and just that snowball effect that they don't want to have happen?
I think they have to get back to being a balanced offense, for one. And I think they just need Jordan Love to play Jordan Love football. And I don't think he has to be lights out. I think he has to be more consistent and not turn the ball over. But, you know, you would think week 2 he's going to be better than he was week 1. And, you know, it's – they can't get behind 28-0. That's what you want to see. You want to see them come out faster. They were coming out faster before, and now they need to really jump on people and not put themselves in that position again.
Spoon, I think the 2 things you said there play into each other, right? I think that they need to not be so quick, even if they don't have a hot start, to get away with what they learned the last 2 weeks worked really well for them. That's the run game, that balance, having actual balance. And I think when you give that patience and you are stubborn and stick to that, that will make your quarterback better, because Jordan Love does need to be better. He needs to be more efficient, and he needs to do what he did late last season and knock off some of the boneheaded decisions with where to go with the ball. Like he after Pittsburgh last year, he was darn near perfect on that. He was just lights out. And it's just been like early last season all over again with him forcing things that weren't there, not seeing things he should. He's got to be better, because it's at the end of the day, yeah, he made a lot of plays too, and he has that ability. But the best thing he did late last season was take care of the football. It's the most important part of the job as a quarterback. It's what Malik Willis did supremely well in his 2 starts. Malik Willis outplayed Jordan Love through their 2 starts this year apiece strictly because he took care of the football. Like, that's the job as a quarterback. You have to do that if you're Jordan Love, but I think balance helps that. It just tilts the field differently when you can have something close to an even split of run and pass. And I get that they were down early big today, and that changes the offense, changes the approach, but there's just – you got to be a little more stubborn, sticking with the run, so that you have the balance than they were today.
Yeah. As we near the end of the show, it's only fitting that as we start to wrap things up, we talk about Aaron Jones making his return to Lambeau. And You could see there were some emotions there. Even during walkthroughs in the pregame and all, you saw him hugging and hanging out with some of the Packers players, the fans. Saw him signed a child's jersey and was able to have a nice just like welcome back, if you will. So just for you guys, what was it like to just kind of see him back in the fold? And he even mentioned there were some times where he said maybe got a little teary-eyed out there.
He looks like Aaron Jones, doesn't he? That was pretty vintage Aaron Jones. Didn't get in the end zone. He said after the game that as they're doing their final kneel down, he was hearing from the Packers defense that he didn't let you in the end zone. No Lambo leaps in our house. That's what he said. I wasn't on the field, so I can't verify it. That's just what Aaron Jones said. Which, if you look, they had 7 plays inside the 10-yard line, the Vikings did today. 2 of those were touchdowns. Aaron Jones was a decoy on both. He touched the ball 3 times in those 7, but it sure looked like that Packers defense was taking it personal not to allow a Lambo leap today. And Kevin O'Connell knew it, knew they would, because it's still a game played amongst humans. I mean, there's personal pride on the line, and I thought the Vikings really used Aaron Jones wisely near the goal line in terms of being a decoy. The second touchdown of the game, they have a fullback with Aaron Jones, kind of the I formation. They slide the fullback to the H-back position. Aaron Jones goes right, the defense goes with him, and they throw back left.
Josh Oliver, you know? Yeah.
The third touchdown of the game, Jordan Addison, they have a jet sweep to the right after faking a handoff to Aaron Jones to the left. So he was a decoy today, but you know, no Lambo leaps. Those 4 catches for 46 yards, though, I mean, everything about what he did today was very vintage Aaron Jones to me.
Yeah, I'm not a real sentimental guy, so I didn't really
pay
too much attention to
no tears?
Yeah, okay. The return of Aaron Jones. I did think he played a very efficient game.
Absolutely.
So he did what the Vikings needed it to do. I thought Kevin O'Connell was just brilliant in his play calling. He called screens at absolute – I mean, some of it was uncanny. Like Halfley brought – blitz from the left side and he threw a screen to the right. You know, it was almost like he just knew what was coming.
Yes.
And some of those quick tosses to Aaron Jones, you know, where, you know, the Packers are overloaded to one side and he gets them around that corner really quick. So he gave them exactly what I think they needed to win the game today. Packers could have used him today.
Yeah.
You know, they needed someone explosive like him.
Yeah,
he's just fun to watch, and he's in his age 30 season now, and he looks as quick as ever. Now it's week 4,
yeah.
So we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
The next time these two, if Aaron Jones is on the field, the next time these two teams play,
I think they used him quite a bit today. How many carries did he?
22.
Yeah, 22 carries is a lot of.
He was the workhorse Josh Jacobs supposed to be.
Yeah, but.
Did you guys – I made my strong opinion known on the Twitter. Did you guys have a strong opinion on the end of first half with Matt LaFleur? Yeah, sportsmanlike.
Yeah. You can go ahead, Spoon.
Oh, yeah, just dumb. I don't know what he did to get the penalty. I'd be really curious. I know he was
– the
sprint, basically?
He was upset not with the spot, as I initially wondered and thought. He was upset with – he went to call the timeout, running clock, and the referees just ignored him, essentially. So he got really heated and was trying to get their attention, which I can understand, although there's 20 seconds left, you're on the 1-foot line. You get your timeout. I think it looked like it was a frustrating first half. You're down 28-0. You're this close to getting a touchdown finally. You bobble. You get down to the 1-foot line. There's just a lot of frustrations going on. And then, oh, by the way, the officials aren't seeing that you're trying to call timeout.
Yeah.
Right? It's human nature. I get it. But my goodness, you're at the 1-foot line and then you're at the 15-yard line?
Yeah.
That can never happen. There's a time and place for righteous anger, and this was righteous anger. I understand that it would have been frustrating in that moment. But the time and place for righteous anger is never at the 1-foot line when you're down 28-0.
Yeah.
That's not it.
I wonder if he thought it was. No, he didn't think it was a touchdown because he wouldn't be calling timeout.
No.
He did. No. It should have been a touchdown.
Yeah. I don't think
you
so.
You felt it should have been?
Really?
No, if he catches it.
I was about to say, because that was a bobble. Yeah,
that
for sure.
That should have been right in his chest.
Yeah, I thought it was at first, too, and then you see on the replay that he caught it twice.
Definitely was. It's great spot. A touchdown.
Yeah. Great spot.
Touchdown.
Yeah.
not great attention by the officials. I mean, right. I understand his frustration there. You're at the 1 foot line. And to Matt LaFleur's credit, he owned it after the game. It was the first thing he said, you know, right there in the opening statement. And the other point, I thought it was good on Matt LaFleur to make this point. This is a team that has been extremely undisciplined with penalties for the first four games. Yeah. And you as a head coach are trying to get that discipline from your team, and then you lose your composure at the 1 foot line.
Yeah.
That's, you got to set the example from the sideline, which he acknowledged. He owned it. It was a mistake, but all you can ask is a guy to own a mistake, and he absolutely did. In the moment, like, you're down 28-0 at the 1 foot line, then you're at the 15 yard line, and Jordan Love bailed him out with his best throw of the day. His best throw of the day.
Say he better be grateful for not only Love, but Jaden Reed for making the catch that he did. Yep. So, because I think that's the other thing. I mean, again, we can talk about the what ifs, you know, like what if Narvison made those kicks, but what if that penalty doesn't turn into, you know, what if they don't score off of that? It could have been a far worse game, because at least you get the ball to start the second half and you figured out something that worked. But man, it could have been much uglier than 31-29. But I mean, that's it. But any other closing words from you guys? Final thoughts? Anything on this team or anything from the NFL as a whole?
I would just say that we kind of have a baseline for injured Jordan Love now. And now I'm very interested to see how that changes, how, up and down he goes with that. But I would say this should be the worst he is physically, unless he really gets hit hard again. I mean, I saw the play that he got hit, and the guy kind of kneed him in the side. And I thought maybe the brace hurt him, because it hit him, like, right on the brace. But, he's got a whole week. I would think he'll be fine. I mean, Justin Herbert's playing with a high ankle sprain every week, and that's not going to get better. His should get better. So I kind of want to see, how it moves off of this baseline in the coming weeks, or does it just stay there?
Yeah. I think we learned today, as we saw him very visibly playing through pain, that it wasn't a fluke. It wasn't fake that he missed the last 2 weeks. Like, he couldn't play the last 2 weeks. If there was any lingering doubt, I think today showed that. Yeah. He tried everything he could, couldn't do it, because he's still playing through pain. I think he showed toughness today. I think that's a good quality to have in a quarterback, obviously. And I think I'll go back to the start. It's a young team. There are going to be growing pains in season two. The growing pains now are light years better than they were a year ago this time. They're actually scoring in the first half. They're actually getting first downs. Last year, week 8 against the Vikings, last time they were at Lambeau Field, it took till 5 minutes left in the second quarter to get a single first down. I looked at that point. The Packers had 9 first downs at that point. They are far ahead of where they were a year ago, but still young and still have growing pains, and it's probably going to be like this for a little while before they get through it. And what they showed last year is they could be 3-6 and finish really strong. I don't think they're going to be 3-6 this year. I think there's every reason to think that they'll finish strong. They got tons of talent. I think that the needle is going to, by second half of the season, probably be heading straight up on their trajectory. And that's really you got to win as many of these games. I thought what Matt LaFleur said today was right. You'd like to learn your lessons through winning. And I think that there's going to be some of that. You want to win as much as you can the first half of the season, get through the growing pains, and then get to the second half of the season where I think they're going to cook.
It's a great way to wrap this thing up. And next week, heading to L.A. to take on the Rams. But the Packers still have plenty to work on, but still a good base of what they need to do moving forward. So thank you for checking out the Green 19 podcast. I'm Dominique Gates, Ryan Wood, and Tom Silverstein.
We League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.